session number 21191, Reel 3.
Bob Creek, Reel 3.
So I patted him on the back and comforted him, really. And I said, you know, don't let anybody else here, because we're a couple. I said, you're a midshipman, I'm a chief. I said, don't let anybody else see it. Anyway, when it got light, I took him swimming with me. What we were trying to do was to get one. There was a big timber floating. We were trying to get this to go into our raft to give it more support, thread it through the raft. We couldn't do it. We'd get one end in, but we couldn't get the other end down enough. But that spent about an hour struggling with this and got us warm and passed the time. And it was after that I saw the shark. But I never did find out who this midshipman was until last week when I went to the last reunion. And I said to one of the officers there, I said, I don't suppose it was you. And he said, no, it wasn't me, but it must have been. And he mentioned somebody's name who was a South African. We have South African people on board as well. So but it doesn't matter, that was just incidental. But he said he's very ill at the moment, he's not very well. I went to see him not long ago when I was in South Africa. And he's not at all well. Well, that's not here nor there. But what on the Enterprise, the next morning, we had breakfast. And I went to the sick bay and got my hands. I'd got wounds on my hands and I must have knocked my leg against something, and that everything had turned black and was getting nasty. So I went to the sick bay and got my hand dressed and bandaged around my leg, and they dressed it, and that's all right. I went on the upper deck, and a petty officer said, because I had no uniform on, just a pair of overalls, that's all I had on, no cap or anything. Petty officer said to me, down in the boat. And I said, no. He said, down in the boat. I said, no, I'm the chief of the RA. He said, no matter, down in the boat. So he ordered me in the boat. I suppose I better go. So I went down in the boat, and what they were doing was taking the wounded ashore. And I was classed as wounded because I've got a couple of bandages on. So they took us ashore in the Maldives. And we stopped there for about 8 or 9 days. We had tents, and there was the Indian artillery regiment was there. They passed. They gave us sandals to wear on our feet because the sand bugs would get you if you didn't. And I spent my time looking after those who really were wounded. You know. Because they had no doctors there, washing out bandages in a bucket of water and putting them back on again. That's all he could do. He couldn't do anything else but that. And eventually, after 8 or 9 days, we were taken off in a boom defence vessel, HMS Kirriemore, it was called. And we steamed across to Mombasa in its HMS Kirriemore. And from Mombasa, we were taken by another cruiser, a D-class cruiser. I'm not sure what it was now, one of the D-class cruisers, down to Durban, where the rest of the survivors had been for a week or more. And they kitted me up with some clothes. And I joined the rest of the survivors, and eventually got home in July. That was July 42, yes. And my time had been up, my 12 years service time was up the previous year, but I carried on serving because the war was on. I intended to leave the Navy after 12 years and become a school teacher. But anyway, I carried on serving, and whilst I was home on leave to Brookvale for the second time, and things were, the Japs were all over the Far East, and I thought, well, this war could have lasted another 10 years, the way it was going. I might as well sign on for my pension, do another 5 years and not get anything for it. So I put in to sign off my pension. Silliest thing I ever did, really. So I've been in the barracks for about 2 or 3 months, been home on leave and getting my victuals and my tot of rum and everything else, working in the dockyard from day to day. As soon as I put in for my pension, they said, oh, we haven't got any papers for you. I wonder what you were doing here. We haven't got any service certificates. They sent for the Admiralty for my service certificates, and I was on draft the next week. Back out to China again. Back out, not China, Far East. Back out to the Far East again in a repair ship.
Which ship was that?
That was HMS Wayland. And there I went. That's another story. Do you want to join?
Please, yes.
Well, at this time, we were in Liverpool when I joined her. She was commissioned with a full Navy crew, but we were about to sail, and they stopped anchor. They stopped sailing because the Admiralty had taken on some what they call special repair ratings. They were dockyard people or people who had a trade, and they just had a trade but no engineering training, but they made them just right for repair ships. They could be in their trade in the various workshops in the repair ship. So all the ERAs who were supposed to be part of the crew who were steaming the ship and be repairing, apart from a number of us who were ship's company to steam it, they all got sent off. And these special repair ratings came on board, all petty officers. Well, some were petty officers and some were just stokers and seamen. So that was it, we sailed for Gibraltar. On the way to Gibraltar, they sorted out who these various people were. I was foreman of the coppersmith shop. I should have had 5 coppersmiths. I hadn't got any coppersmiths at all. There wasn't a coppersmith amongst them. There were plumbers and plumbers' mates, but no coppersmiths. So they said, oh, don't worry, you, we'll send some out to you before we get any further. So we spent a couple of days, or probably about a week or so in Gibraltar, went to Freetown, spent a couple of weeks there. Still got no coppersmiths, got round the Cape Town, there's still no coppersmiths, got round the Mombasa, still no coppersmiths. I said, well, I'm doing all the work myself. I'm doing 5 men's work. I'm supposed to be the foreman. And I'm doing all of it. But nobody came to relieve me. So I carried on steaming the ship when we were at sea. But when we were in harbour, I was doing coppersmiths. Various repairs used to come on board to be done, and I'd tackle them. We got to Mombasa. And they had some special repair ratings there, which they sent on board daily. Sent me 2 coppersmiths every day to do a bit whilst we were there. But when we left, they still didn't come with us. We went back into the Med. We finished up in near Bizerta, a place called Ferryville. We were there for the Italian invasion. Ferryville was right at the back of the harbour. It was an old French dockyard, which had been completely sabotaged by the French before they left, I suppose, or was somebody. It wasn't any use as a dockyard. We were the repair ship doing whatever repairs came in. And we spent a year there, over 11 months anyway, just stuck alongside the wall doing repairs. And I still had no coppersmiths, not for the whole of the time. I just did it. I did 5 men's work. What I did eventually was to take a couple of these plumbers' mates and train them up. to do little bits and pieces. I said, you can do this, show you how to do it, and let him do the simple jobs. So I had two plumber's mates who were acting coppersmiths, learning the trade, so to speak. It didn't matter, but we went ashore nearly every night there. The chief ERAs, we used to go ashore together and found some place to get a drop of wine. But there was nothing there. It was just an empty, a barren port. Nobody lived more. There were some natives living there, but it was more an empty port. We just worked night and day repairing. When the Italian invasion was over, we went back through the Mediterranean, back through the Suez Canal, out to Colombo, to Trincomalee. And we then worked alongside a dock. We were the repair ship for the dock that was there, refitting submarines. And I spent about, I suppose, another year. Still had no coppersmiths. I never did get any extra coppersmiths. In the meantime, Lord Mountbatten had come out to the Far East as commander-in-chief, and he said, the people have been out here far too long. The people, because the Burma War was fighting, he said, people have been out of the whole of the war. Anybody that's been out here more than 3 years has got to be sent home. Well, I'd been out there nearly 7 years by this time. About 6 years, apart from a very brief period at home. So I was sent home. They suddenly found five coppersmiths to relieve me. So I left the ship with my toolbox and five coppersmiths down below that hadn't been in the ship only 12 hours. That was it. And I was being sent home in the Repulse, my old ship. No, Renown, sorry, Renown. Repulse was sunk. My old ship, Renown. But I didn't go to Renown. I got in a train overnight, went down, travelled all night in this train, got to Colombo about 8 o'clock on Sunday morning, went to the barracks there. They didn't want to know anything about me. I said, well, look, I've got a draft ship here. I've got to go to the Renown. Sorry, you can't go to the Renown. She's out in the harbour. I said, well, no, she's out in the harbour. No, you can't go to the Renown. You're going to put me in a lorry, send me off to a place called Maina. It's a camp up in the jungle. Sent me up to this Maina camp. And I was there for about 8 or 9 days. Every morning I used to go out as a drafting. I said, I've got to go to the Renown, I'm being sent home. No, carry on. But one morning I went there, I said, yes, well, you're going this morning. So I joined the Renown, got in this lorry and back to Colombo. Joined the Renown. I went on watch within an hour of being on board, and I was down below steaming around the harbour, chief ERA. I knew her because she was the old ship. And we steamed her home at high speed. And we went nearly across to America to avoid submarines that were apparently reported. But we came right back to Liverpool, I think it was. And I went home, got home just in time for VE Day, Victory in Europe Day. So I had quite a bit of leave to come by this time. I had my leave, had to celebrate, organised a street party where my wife lived, because she'd gone back to her mother by this time. She went back to her mother's when I first left England before the war. And we let our house and stored the furniture. And my son was by this time was getting only about 7 years old. Didn't know his dad, he knew his granddad, he didn't know his dad. But anyway, we we had quite a bit of leave, and I got back into barracks again, and I got drafted off to a tank landing ship that was being built, because the Japanese war was still going on. The victory in Europe was finished, but the Japanese were still fighting, and I was drafted to this tank landing ship, which was being built, or nearly finished being built. The chap who stood by all the time that she was being built, he went sick or something, so I had to pick her up cold, so to speak. I picked her up, and we steamed, I think it was November, we did trials and so on. I joined her about, I think it was probably June or July. Of course, the Japanese war was over at the end of August, if you remember. But we were still going out, still carried on steaming. We loaded up with tanks after trials, went to Southampton and loaded up with lorries and vehicles of all sorts, to take out to Burma, because the war was still going on in Burma. And so I was going back out Far East again, and I'd just been, the war was over, and I'm still going back out the Far East again.
What's the name of this ship?
LST 3002, tank landing ship 3002. It's a steam, they had two steam engines. Anyway, we got through the Suez Canal into the Red Sea. It was just coming about a week before Christmas, 10 days before Christmas, I think. And we got rammed in the middle of the night by a victory ship that was coming home, the American victory ship, steaming home to get home in time for Christmas. Nearly cut us in two. We had to abandon ship up a rope ladder. I wasn't going to get caught out twice with abandoning the ship. I packed the suitcase, because I had a cabin aboard that ship. Packed the suitcase and said, haul it up. They hauled the suitcase up on a rope, and I climbed up this rope ladder hanging over the bows. And we looked down at the old NST. She was still afloat. And I said, well, I don't know. She's on an even keel. She's afloat. It carved through. We were 53 feet in the beam, and it went through, I think, 48 feet. No, 53 feet in the beam. It went through. There were only 11 feet left. 11 feet wasn't cut. Just one gangway. Anyway, I said, all you can do is to back out of it and see what happens. So the captain, who was on the, looking down with me, and he stank of whiskey, this American captain. He was draft drunk, I think. He backed out and did it rather clumsily. He sheared all our guardrails and our boat, David, down. But he got clear. We backed off about half a mile, and the ship was still afloat. Oh, I'd left one boiler banked and the diesel running. We stopped the diesel, but left the boiler banked. Anyway, in the morning, about 5:30, when the dawn broke, she was still afloat. She was on an even keel, a bit low in the water, but not very far, not much down. So I said, we'll go back and steam her. I reckon she's savable. So we took a volunteer small crew, back in this motorboat. And we had it going stow astern in about, well, half an hour, because the boiler was already banked. She was so badly cut enough, I didn't steam her ahead in case it was too much. I thought we'd best drag it astern, and the engine is at the back. Everything that matters is at the back. The front bit doesn't matter. You can drop off if it likes. But if we pushed it forward. So we went astern for about several hours. And after about 10 hours, a sloop came out and escorted us. She said, oh, we'll tow you. So they towed us by putting a rope over the top of the gap, over the hatch, because there's a hatch down to the hold. So they towed, they were pulling the back half forward. So we were steaming slow forward and being towed slow forward as well. And we rigged up a batten across the gap about 10 feet so we could see if it was moving, if it was in line with a break off. Set a watch on that. And we carried on steaming for 2 days. We steamed in, got back into Suez, Port Jufik, and we were pretty ramshackle. There was only about a dozen of us. We opened the rum store up, helped ourselves to rum. We had a pretty good time actually, Steve. Singing rum and Coca Cola. We came into the harbour with our loudspeaker playing this record, drinking rum and Coca Cola. Do you remember the tune?
Rum and Limonana.
Rum and Coca Cola. It was the tune that was. It was being played at the time. Drinking rum and Coca-Cola, go down Point Tumana. Well, so we had this tune playing as we steamed in the harbour, and the captain was having babies on. Our captain, who was waiting for us to come in on the side, was having babies because we were playing this tune. It didn't matter. We got on board, and we'd lost one chap in the collision. He was wrapped up inside the curled up bit where the ship had come through. And we went into the dry dock. I had to try and cut him out. Couldn't use oxyacetylene because there was so much fuel about. So I had a hammer and coal chisel, cut him through the bulkhead to try and get at him. He was smelling very bad. He'd been there 4 or 5 days by this time. And what was the fuel and what was this body? It was pretty ghastly work. We cut him out eventually. The army came and took him away. That's the only chap we lost aboard there. And we spent about 3 or 4 months being repaired by an Egyptian dockyard. We went to Alexandria after we were repaired, and they were closing Alexandria down then, the dockyard, so we picked up stores from Alexandria to take to Malta. When we got to Malta, they said, oh, you can't go home like that. This repair is no good, not seaworthy. You never get across the bay in this. So they ripped out all the repair that the Egyptians had done, and we spent 3 months in Malta being re-repaired. I didn't get home until August.
What does draft drunk mean?
Draft drunk?
That's what you said. You said this American captain was draft drunk.
No, I said I think he was half drunk.
Half drunk?
Yeah. I think he was half drunk. He smelled a whiskey.
What do you mean by victory ship?
A victory ship was one that was built during the war. They were very big ships. There were two sorts of ships. There were victory ships and liberty ships. Liberty ships they used them for carrying cargo across the ocean. The victory ships were the later ones. They were much bigger and very, very high bows. They were called victory ships. There were just two classes of ships. The Americans built them like hand over fist, one a day during the war. And where was I?
You came home in August.
I got home in August, that's it. Then my wife was still living in the country. We still couldn't get our house back. I got a shore job. And I was living ashore on what we call lodging comp, getting the lodging allowance, and living ashore in the Navy house, doing a job in the dockyard, an instructor in the dockyard, in the MTE. My wife was going home every Friday for a weekend, come back Sunday night for Monday morning. And we did this for, I suppose, several months. And no sign of getting married. We went to court to try and get the tenants out of my house, and the judge said, "Oh no, you can't come. Think you can come out of the Navy and turn old people out of their home? Because this chap had got an old mother who was nearly blind, and the judge took pity on her. So he wouldn't let us have our house back." So eventually, the mayor of Gillingham was an ex-shipmate of mine, HMS Repulse. I went to see him and I said, "Look, any chance of getting the council house?" He said, "Well, why not? I've got two boys by this time, and a third one coming." So he put me down for a council house, and I got one. So my wife came back to live with me in a council house in Gillingham. And we still couldn't get a house back. But eventually so we lived in this council, and I got drafted again to a cruiser. Back to, that was HMS, oh dear. I had HMS die then for about 6 months in the Home Fleet. And then I got drafted to HMS Swiftsure. The Korean War started by this time. And so although my pension time was already up, I still couldn't come out. In the meantime, the schoolmaster aboard Swiftsure showed me an AFO, an Admiralty Fleet Order, saying, "Look, you can, if you like, take an examination for the Civil Service Executive Officer." I had, in fact, been trying to become a probation officer. I'd done a course in psychology and applied to the Home Office to become a probation officer. And they interviewed me and said, "Yes, that's all right, we'll accept you." But eventually, he said, there's an examination for executive officer in the civil service. I said, "I'll take it and see what happens." So I took the examination for executive officer in the civil service at Newcastle and did quite well in it, actually. Passed it. But I still couldn't get out, although my pension time was up, because the Korean War was on. So all mobilisation was halted. We were still in the Home Fleet at that time. And then I got the commandery apparently recommended me for a commission, because an AFO came out, so I've got that in there as well, saying I would be commissioned at a certain date. I think it was October, gave a date. But I said, I'd have to do 5 more years' service if I was commissioned. I had to guarantee to do 5 more. I said, "No way am I doing it. I spent eight years away during the war, after the war. I'm not doing another 5 years." So I turned the commission down. I said, "I've already passed for the civil service anyway, as an executive officer." So eventually, they discharged me from the Swiftsure. She went out to the Far East to be in the Korean War, and I was drafted to Berry Head, which was a reserve fleet ship, for the last 9 months. And eventually I was discharged in February the 22nd, 1952.
Did you become a probation officer?
No, I didn't become it, because what happened about the probation officer was they had had so many people coming out of the forces, going to university, they said they wouldn't take anybody who hadn't been to university. They offered to have me if I would go to Southampton University, had a place for me. And I said, "Well, look, I've got 3 children now. I've got 3 boys, and I've just got. I can't afford to go to university anymore. I've got no money." I said, anyway, I already passed for the civil service, so I'll take that. So I kept waiting for the civil service in the Inland Revenue. Controller of stamps. I don't think you want any more, do you?